The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the MadTech Podcast. I'm Amy, your host, and I'm joined by our research lead, Matt. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Amy. Pleased to be here.
Good to have you here, as always. And our guest today, Ellie Hooper, who is head of client at The Goat Agency. How are you, Ellie?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you here. Okay, let's begin. So today we'll be discussing a talent initiative encouraging diversity in the ad tech industry, social platforms' continued push towards video content, and the expansion of the IAB's Gold Standard Initiative. So starting with an article from the Media Leader, the IPA, the Institute of Practitioners in Advertising, has rolled out the second edition of its Step Into Adland initiative in partnership with TikTok to attract more diverse young talent into the ad industry. The IPA got 5 TikTok creators to spend time at industry agencies to showcase what working at an agency looks like. So going a bit further into this topic, Ellie, what can the wider ad industry do to encourage more diverse talent?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. And I think it's a really good partnership actually between a platform like TikTok and the IPA. Obviously, they've done a great job of essentially using platforms where younger generations are naturally sitting, engaging with content, consuming content, and kind of pushing out information to communities that might need to know more about it. I think there's a lot of work, however, that does need to be done in encouraging DE&I. I would also kind of say that I can't speak for Group M on this necessarily, but my personal view is that, you know, we've seen diverse teams create better campaigns. So actually encouraging DE&I and having that as a real focus, particularly in the ad industry, is really important. Obviously, what the IPA have done with TikTok is using creators to essentially spread that message. I think there's real opportunity as well for individuals within the ad industry who can act as creators themselves to talk about their experiences and have that kind of responsibility to talk to people that might need more information on jobs within the ad industry, etc., to kind of encourage them to explore those opportunities. So I actually think there should be a real rise of kind of nano micro creators on platforms like TikTok or even kind of wider platforms like LinkedIn, etc., that do really talk about their experience and also kind of push the boundaries within the ad industry to support these kind of initiatives.
Yeah, there's a lot of space for that, and they've definitely used the right platform for it, like where all the young people are. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with Ellie. And I think initiatives like this one, you know, it's speaking to those younger, diverse audiences in their spaces. And, you know, within the advertising industry, that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. It's like the difference between advertising on classic FM versus advertising on LinkedIn versus TikTok. Obviously, Gen Z and younger audiences are very comfortable with the idea of marketing. They live and breathe how influencers work. It's like saying, you know, as a millennial, am I comfortable with cat videos? Yes, we live and breathe that all over the internet all the time. So I think it's just a case of answering their questions, advising them, how can they turn that interest and inherent knowledge of marketing into a career within the industry? And I think in terms of fostering that diverse talent, it should be also a case of show, don't necessarily tell. If you have a strong diverse talent base, then nurture it and showcase it, whether that's through social posts, whether that's through, you know, content such as interviews and bylines, event attendance to help build up their network, and speaking engagements help build their profile. Get those voices out there, showcase it, and that's how you're going to attract more of that talent to the industry.
I think also within this topic, there's something to be said around kind of knowledge around what's even available. Like, I'm sure when everyone in advertising started their careers, they went into account management because they might have had a friend that knew that, or they went into strategy because that was a job role that they saw open at one ad industry that they knew. And I think actually, like, really opening up and understanding different job roles, functionalities, like areas of interest that people might not even know about is so important. And I think that's something where we can really use people's kind of background, knowledge, etc., to provide great value to the ad industry and create that innovation. I think that's probably something that's missing, is just understanding what's even out there as a kind of first step. So actually having these kind of initiatives helps to even just demonstrate what it's like being at an ad industry and the real breadth of roles and opportunities available to young people.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, it's hard to know, especially when you're starting out, it's hard to know what's out there, what the different opportunities are, definitely. So just going back to you, Matt, do you think we could see a decrease in these types of initiatives after seeing that some major companies have been terminating theirs at the moment, like Meta, for example?
Yeah, I really hope not. Yeah, I've been in a privileged position over the years in the industry of running interviews and attending events with a real cross-section of the industry. And, you know, from experience, having that diverse range of voices within the industry that we hear from and learn from is undoubtedly a massive positive. And I think if we as an industry were to walk back on some of that great work that has been done to bolster that diversity, then I think we'll just be all the poorer for it.
Yeah. I hope that things don't go down on that track. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to our second story then. So this is from TechCrunch and is looking at Blue Sky launching a custom video feed for vertical videos. So on its mobile app, users can now find a trending video section in the Explore tab, and users can also flip through a customizable video feed with content from specific hashtags. So back to you, Ellie, on this one. For how long do you think the global push to video content will continue? Do you think users are getting tired of all the platforms kind of pushing video at this point?
I think this is such an interesting question. And I think firstly, really interesting to bring it back to Blue Sky. So Blue Sky is obviously predominantly in a US audience. I didn't know a ton about it. I knew that it was around, but I didn't really know about the decentralization of their feeds, etc. I found that all out yesterday by using video and going on TikTok to find out about it. I didn't use Google. I can't really remember the last time I used Google to find out something and really get a concrete answer in different opinions. I went on TikTok and I immediately found out what it was, marketers' opinions on it and innovation in the industry and how it's developed. I think it's, I mean, like, when we do look at short form video, like the reason we like it is because it's so digestible. You find out quite a lot of information. We know that user behavior is changing. We have little attention span these days, and we find things out quickly in 15 second short, snappy videos. Do I think there's going to be fatigue on videos? Not necessarily. I don't think that we're going to stop consuming in that way. Do I think, however, that there will likely be a push and change of algorithms on the platforms where we do predominantly consume short form video? Yes. I think we've gotten to a point where we love short form video so much that doom scrolling is a fairly is now a fairly kind of like overused phrase, particularly in our industry, where we are just kind of over consuming this kind of content, and it is pretty mind numbing. And I think there will probably be a push less on fatigue, but more around user behavior to kind of step back from doom scrolling and actually start to engage and consume genuinely valuable content that they enjoy. So actually, I do think Blue Sky is quite interesting in that you can really start to tailor the feeds that you look at. And if you're interested one day in cats, as you say, Matt, or actually the next day you want to look at, I don't know, like understanding Blue Sky, you could do that. I think TikTok's kind of innovation where they now have a STEM feed, I think is quite interesting. So you can have your FYP, which does everything to rot your brain, and then you can do everything across STEM, which is quite interesting. You can actually engage and educate yourself. I don't necessarily think it's fatigue on short form video as a content output. I think it's more fatigue on the content that we are consuming within that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. Yeah, like you said, it was an interesting thing to introduce the STEM feed on TikTok. But just going back to what you said there, what do you think, sort of, if there were changes to those algorithms, what do you think that would look like in the future, that they would change them to kind of be better for users? Or what exactly did you mean by that?
I think, so when you go on, I think, okay, let's take TikTok as an algorithm. It will show me predominantly kind of content that I engage with, whether that's from a certain type of creator or in a certain kind of communication space or whatever that might be, as well as showing me a few rogue bits of content that I might like, and then I can either accept or reject it on my FYP. On the whole, when I go on TikTok, I think as most people go on social media platforms, they're using it, you know, on their lunch break, on their way to work, you know, in the evening when they want to kind of, I don't know, decompress. I'm not quite sure if TikTok is allowing us to decompress in that way anymore. I think there will be a bit of a behavior shift to kind of step away from something like TikTok and actually then explore other platforms. I think there is real opportunity unless algorithms start to, I think, perhaps become maybe a little smarter in giving people new pieces of content within the algorithm. I'd say I probably get 10% of content that's actually rogue to my algorithm. And I think including 20% of that might allow me to explore different areas that aren't quite as mind numbing, if that makes sense. And I think it does allow a real kind of opportunity to advertisers and brands to also step up in that space. And particularly we might look at like financial companies, whatever that might be, actually kind of providing educational pieces of content that prove real brand equity and kind of, you know, speak about something different that people are actually interested in and really start to diversify those feeds.
Yeah, those are some interesting points. What do you think on that, Matt?
Yeah, I think in terms of, I think the algorithms is where the platforms are really going to kind of try and differentiate from each other, because it's starting to feel, you know, especially, you know, between the likes of Instagram Reels and TikTok and YouTube Shorts, it's all converging a bit. And I think that's where, you know, that point of saturation may kick in. I agree with Ellie, I don't think short form video is going to go away, but I think there may be in the future a differentiator that comes in and, you know, not necessarily makes TikTok look like MySpace, but it will be something new and a bit refreshing in terms of either how those videos are presented or in terms of they're just able to tweak those algorithms and show you content that you really engage with. So, for example, I use Instagram Reels. I would say I flick through. There's not a lot of time where I, you know, sit and watch a video, flick through, sit and watch a video to completion. There's a lot of, I don't like the look of that, I'll go on to another video. Ah, now there's a video I want to watch. So I think, you know, honing down on those algorithms, I think that's going to be where it's going to develop going forwards. And again, I think that can be, you know, once that engagement in terms of, you know, locking into the videos is in place, I think that's where, you know, advertising has a real opportunity to work with that and synergize with that.
I also think if I could just, can I build on that?
Yeah, of course.
I also think what's quite interesting is when we think about like short form video and something like TikTok, obviously TikTok is completely associated with short, snappy bits of content that are humorous or whatever that might be. We've obviously seen a real kind of development in even carousels, which traditionally was an Instagram kind of format. And carousels have done exceptionally well on something like TikTok, as have actually longer form video, which is traditionally YouTube. I think it is more about the kind of tweaks and improvements and innovation that certain platforms are making in terms of value exchange. That being said, we need to really look at those audiences, because TikTok has also introduced stories and that's not really taken off, right? But that's exact. Instagram is all I use Instagram for now is something like stories. And I think really it's all to do with understanding your consumer and your audience, the behavior that they, the behavior that they kind of show, the different types of narrative, pieces of content, et cetera, that people are looking at, and being fairly platform agnostic when you are looking at your marketing strategies. Video will always be a thing. It's big on stories, as big as it is on TikToks, but it's just a different kind of output and where it lives. So yeah, I think it's not going anywhere, but is evolving in terms of maybe the diversification on these platforms and who's using what.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah, there's so many different features now on TikTok. I mean, all the platforms have kind of copied each other in different ways. But yeah, it's interesting how you say, obviously, TikTok started out more as something where it'd be, you think of really short content. But like me personally, I would say like half the videos that come up on my TikTok are like actually quite long form videos. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, like that person you spoke about getting married to someone that they didn't know in like a 40 part series where each video is like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Never watched it, but went down exceptionally well.
No, I don't think I watched that one either, but I've watched like loads of similar ones where it's like, yeah, there's loads of long videos like that. So just going back to Blue Sky again, how much of a chance does Blue Sky stand? What do you think, Ellie? Like, you know, among all the kind of social platforms that exist.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think from Blue Sky themselves, it's going to require, obviously, a big look at their user acquisition and retention strategy. I think it'll also depend on their view on creators and how much they do encourage that, because ultimately we go on social to show our lives a little bit, but really it's to follow other people and be entertained. So I think, is it a creator-first strategy and how are they going to be looking at that? I think, though, the approach that they've taken is really interesting. And I think with user behavior in kind of the mid to long term, where we are looking at kind of doom scrolling as a point on TikTok, people are starting to kind of you know, come off it and really look for that value exchange in their platforms that they use and are more thoughtful with their time. I think if Blue Sky adapt to that user behavior and really do provide that value exchange in the right way, actually it could be a really interesting platform. Whether they're going to get global reach is another interesting one. I think obviously TikTok did really boom in the US and there are various creators that really pushed that, and then it kind of expanded, and there are some markets that are more mature than others, so there will be across that kind of longer term view how that does expand. But I think that'll be important for them. I think the big thing though, looking very quickly at what Blue Sky can do, they might be able to acquire all these users and get people on it. It's the same with Clubhouse, you know, loads of people like that at the beginning, then literally I think within like 2 weeks it was gone. Same with Be Real, you know, out in the States they also have Triller, Lemonade, etc. Like there's big competition here, so I think they can get these people on their platforms, people are intrigued. Whether they can retain them by actually proving value for them and having strong infrastructure that can scale, I think I saw something that was you know, published in the back end of last year, and it was saying that one person had created like 50,000 algorithms or something. That's amazing, but do they have the infrastructure to actually do that and stick up to their word? Who knows? But I think it's definitely one to look out for. I think us as users, we are changing the way that we do think about, you know, what we want to see, but also our data and what that looks like. And actually Blue Sky does offer some good solutions. However we want everything in one place, I don't know. Personally, I like that I click out of TikTok and I can have a 3-minute scroll on Instagram and then I'm done with my social media. Do I like the idea that I could get everything on one app and then never leave it? Potentially not. So not very conclusive, but I do think it's quite interesting how they are evolving. And I think if we start to see it in other fairly mature markets, then I think it'll be a real contender.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I definitely prefer being able to switch between different social medias for different things. But yeah, like you said, it would be interesting to see whether Blue Sky can actually retain the users that they're getting. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting platform. I think it's got an interesting space within the market that Twitter used to occupy. I'm not saying Twitter was perfect before Musk takeover. It did have, the bot reporting, systemic underreporting of bot accounts and how it reported its audience. But it was different to other platforms, which are now, again, they're trying to become a bit more samey. And it was a lot more politically agnostic as well. And I think, X nowadays is always going to remain a bit more algorithmically biased towards whatever Elon Musk wants you to see, which is usually himself. And Threads, on that Meta platform, is always going to remain algorithmically aligned with that. Whereas Blue Sky, it's retained what Twitter used to be, which is that chronological feed. It's based upon who you're actively following. Yes, you can go viral on it, but it's if, someone you know or someone you follow has retweeted that or, whatever the equivalent on Blue Sky is. So I think to have that more chronological feed rather than the algorithm feed is quite an interesting point of differentiation there. Whether it changes or not, going back to Ellie's point in terms of, retaining those users and it actually decides, no, we need more of an algorithm to keep users locked into the platform, that remains to be seen. But yeah, at the moment, it does have that little point of difference, which may help it retain those users.
Mm. I think also from my understanding, it's fairly immature in its monetization capabilities, which again will not only attract good talent, I think at the moment it's just attracting kind of tech-savvy early adopters of this kind of thing, which aren't necessarily the people the kind of content that everyone wants to follow. I think if they can monetize certain things for creators to make it an enticing platform to be on, but as well as, supplying strong ad formats and ways that actually brands and advertisers can interact with those communities, that'll be another interesting kind of area. But I think without that, that's really where we can look at scale. I think it's so interesting. We often say like the power of creator marketing often comes from, niche content to niche audiences, but doing that at scale. At the moment, I see niche content to niche audiences, but not much scale. So whether we can get the scale from that platform, I think will be the kind of telling point of difference in whether they can actually succeed.
Yeah. And it'll be really interesting to see if they are able to do that because of the decentralized nature of the platform. Okay. Obviously, you say decentralization on one hand, to a marketer that could also read fragmentation, which obviously is a bit of an off-putter. So if they're able to to crack that and make advertising work for the platform. It'll be, yeah, hugely interesting to see that come off.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they manage to do in the next few years. So now on to our last story, which is also from the Media Leader. The IAB has expanded its gold standard initiative to include connected TV and retail media for the first time. So now companies and retail media networks will be able to become IAB gold standard certified by aligning their practices with the IAB's measurement standards. The IAB is also introducing a sustainability pillar into the gold standard with the goal of reducing carbon emissions in the digital ad ecosystem. So how do you think advertisers can use these types of initiatives to their advantage? Ellie, what do you think?
I think firstly, this is really interesting. I think it's a really good signal to the industry that digital advertising is booming, really here to stay, and it has structural measurement capabilities that they just need to be standardized. I think obviously in the first point around kind of what this looks like, obviously that increased transparency and trust with those standardized metrics, I think is really exciting. It gives us great confidence in that data so that everyone's, you know, speaking the same language and ultimately we're providing the best value in our media plans. I think that's something that is huge and has probably been missing for a little while. Obviously, then looking at kind of like better targeting and efficiency in those media plans, better audience understanding, better user journeys. I think it's huge. It's a really big move. I think the measurement piece and the attribution piece is also kind of very enticing when we are looking at this. I think we really start to understand what media channels do best to what audience, when, where, etc., and having that kind of granularity and standardization to be able to measure the different impact will, I think, help to, you know, put forward better, more efficient strategies that really do nail the bottom line. I think the next piece in this, though, probably is attribution and starting to improve those methodologies so that we are making the most of the data we have. Obviously, we can start to compare apples to apples, but if that's not necessarily pulling in to best understand sort of what that impact looks like, I think that's potentially where we can kind of look to improve. But yeah, I think it's exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely good to be seeing more of that standardization. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the standardization is hugely important, especially in these emerging and highly fragmented markets such as CTV, such as retail media. So, you know, to actually try and get everyone on the same page in terms of, you know, theoretically basic things, you know, like what is an impression? What is viewability? What are completion rates as it pertains to these formats? Yes, it sounds basic, but to get everyone on the same page in terms of that side of things is hugely important. So yeah, I'm all for, you know, certification standards such as these. There are, you know, a couple of areas which I think are a little weaker within the certification. You know, in theory, listing all the subdomains for our direct seller to help identify made for advertising networks, yes, that's a huge positive. But if you look at those that are gold standard certified already, you know, you've got the likes of Sky, The Guardian, The Telegraph. These are premium publishers and they're not the operators of MFA networks which should be targeted. So again, there's work to be done. And there are some, you know, aside from certification, there are third party and technology solutions out there. You know, you've got the likes of curated media coming to the fore, private marketplaces, verification platforms, etc., to help marketers to place their ads within that high quality inventory. But at this time, they're not necessarily foolproof. So I think it's still hugely important for marketers to regularly audit where their ads are being placed and review that to make sure that their ads are going to the audiences where they want them to be seen from.
Yeah. And Matt, do you think we require more guidelines around measurement sort of as an industry, or do you think there are enough?
I think it's a bit of an odd one because, well, yes, there have been major positive steps. And I think, you know, the likes of IB Tech Lab and things like the Open Measurement SDK, those are hugely positive steps. And I don't think necessarily the issue is guidelines at this point. It's more about allowing for consistent application of these. You know, you've got obviously, you know, the likes of these, you know, the Open Measurement SDK, but now you've got Google saying, yeah, if we're going to overhaul measurement and attribution through the privacy sandbox and deprecate the third-party cookie. Where does that leave us? You've got obviously massive fragmentation in the CTV market, and nationally we're starting to see people take different interpretations of things like GDPR and cookie laws, and privacy laws and that kind of thing. So I don't think it's necessarily the guidelines that need to change. It's more just allowing for consistent application of those. But obviously, we do exist in a rapidly changing industry. So it's just making sure that the industry bodies, and I think most importantly, you know, those at the end of the supply chain, so the publishers and the brands, that they're aware of what's available on the market to help them understand and measure that either their advertising efforts or their sales, to make that as efficient as possible. But yeah, it's not an easy job probably to help build these standards. So yeah, I certainly don't envy them at all.
What do you think, Eddie?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, as you say, Matt, it's not necessarily about the guidance. I think we've obviously made strong strides in what that looks like for the current ecosystem that we're in. But I think there is an element of future-proofing. Like, everything is evolving so quickly, whether that comes to, you know, how we use different platforms. I think there's so much now that we're looking at in terms of innovation for cross-platform strategies. I know that we've seen it a lot when it comes to even influencer and running influencer content across DSP, which might not even have been considered within that retail media kind of environment. I think the guidance is good. As you say, I think it's about the application and what that looks like, and kind of really looking to future-proof ourselves and understand what that innovation is from application, from that guidance, if that makes sense as you say that. So I've repeated exactly what you've said. But yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, no, those are some good points there. Well, I think that's a good note to finish on. So thanks, Matt, as always. And thanks so much, Ellie. It was great to have you here, and your insights, that's really interesting.
Cool. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thanks again. Thanks to all our listeners.